Hello. Yes, we're back two in a row. The photo show is here. Ewan Rankin, pro photographer from Birmingham in the UK, delivering the tech news of photography and answering your questions, except not this week because we've had Photo Keener and all that kind of stuff, and bring you the latest news on the gear and maybe a bit of tasteless opinion, perhaps. Who knows? Joining me, nobody. It's just me that goes through it all. So you can join in if you want via a chat room, or you can send me emails, britishtechnetwork@gmail.com, if you've got a question, and I will answer it for you. We've had a couple of reviews. Thanks to the people that have taken the time. Really nice ones as well. We got one from Petrolhead, of course, the other week, that said, "I love this show, but where's it gone?" But we've had one from Gloss Matt, and he said, "Welcome back. You've been gone far too long." 10 months, mate. Yeah, I know. Another top-grade show from the British Tech Network. Check out what other shows they have to offer as well. We've got some great shows at the moment. First off, I've got to tell you that The Daily Show is back. That's the news show. It used to be British Tech. It used to be the Bagel Tech News Show. It was where we started. I did that show for 3.5 years, and I can tell you it is a friggin' hard show to do. 3 hours a day of relentless searching for stories and then recording and editing and posting before you go out to work. Well, I'm not doing it because Christ knows how I had the time before. Kyle Swagger's doing it now. So if you go to britishtechnetwork.com, you'll see the news show right there back, top left show. Click on that and subscribe in iTunes. Give us some reviews as well for the new show, because we've only got reviews of the old stuff as well. Try and get us up there in iTunes if you possibly can. But Kyle's doing a fantastic job. Absolute corker this morning. A couple of spit your tea out lines. Well done, mate. Superb. So yeah, get back out there. Check out the new show. And we've got one from MediaMan210. Great to hear you back on the photo show, Ewan. Looking forward to it. Always good to hear your balanced approach. Some of the emails don't think it's that balanced. To all areas of photography and a local lad. And listening to a local lad is always a bonus. Thank you, matey. I shall, I'll do my very best. We've got a video review of the iPhone. So I'm not going to do it here particularly. I've done a couple of test shots, compared it against the Lumia. It does very well. I'm very, very impressed. The slow-mo, well, I've posted a couple of videos that you can have a look at on britishtechnetwork.com on or British Tech Network on YouTube. Go and have a check it out, because it is superb. So thank you very much for the reviews. Please keep them coming. They do mean an awful lot to us. So straight off then with the news. So this is probably the best selfie you'll ever see. It's certainly the techiest selfie you'll ever see. This is the Rosetta spacecraft taking a picture of itself along with its the comet 67P Chimaev-Gerasimenko. Yes, it is a cool picture. That picture is certainly the furthest selfie that's ever been taken in the world, because it's, well, not in the world, it's 250 million miles away. The comet has got in on the photo. They're calling it a photo bomb, but I cannot wait to see this mission come to fruition, because it is some of the coolest stuff out there. But to get a picture back from an orbiting spacecraft or 250 million miles away, I think is really, really cool. Well done, European Space Agency. Got to be proud to be European. Absolutely got to be proud to be European. Now do you recognise this photo? This photo has been... someone said, "Do you know anyone in this photo?" And they sent out some emails and stuff. They didn't send out tweets because it happened 13 years ago. This is Elizabeth Keefe, and she found the image after 9/11. It had fluttered down. She picked it up and thought, someone must own this. So she has been trying to get this wedding photograph back to the rightful owners for 13 years. And this week, she managed. The smiling bride and groom and four wedding guests was given to Keith by a friend who found it at Ground Zero after the 9/11 attack. And if you look to the left, you'll see a guy there, Fred W. May. He's the blonde-haired chap looking straight at the camera. And he tweeted back to her after everyone went out on Twitter in the end and said, "Yep, it's mine. I know those people, most definitely." So he reclaimed the photo on their behalf. The good news is everyone in the image is alive and well. None of them were actually involved in or were fatally injured. The guy in the beard, I think, is the one who owns the photo at the front. But everyone is alive and well. No one's touched by 9/11. So a good story. Really like that one. Now, do you know this woman? If you do, you're going to have to clear your browsing history because your wife's going to find it. This is a mathematics book that was published. It's a Thailand-based company who wanted to put a nice picture of a girl doing mathematics on the front. So they took this still image. Unfortunately, the still image that they took is of an actress called Mana Oki. And she's the girl there. And that's a still taken from a porn video that she was in. The film that she was in was called Costume Play Working Girl, and that's still from it. And whoever made the book took it and decided to put it on the front of the math book. 3,000 of these have had to be recalled because they didn't do any due diligence on the image tech. Forget about your copyright issues. This is just about making sure you don't pick the wrong frigging photo. Bloody hell. 3,000 of those, that must cost a fair bit. Flickr has launched an under-20s campaign. This under-20s campaign is going to be for young photographers to show off their talent. It wants to recognise some of the most talented young photographers in its community. The 20 Under 20 is an annual award that honours 20 of the world's most extraordinary young photographers on Flickr. To select the winners of this year, the photo sharing service has listed Lou Noble, Cuba Gallery, Rosie Hardy and Bernardo Hernandez, who's the Flickr's head honcho photography. They've looked through 1,000 photographs and they're going to come back with 20 winners. Those 20 winners are listed on the page if you want to go and see them. I've had a look through the images. Some of them are startling. But I tossed a camera to me son a few weeks ago at a wedding and said, it's my cousin's wedding. I'm not going to do anything. I'm not working. Here's a camera, son. Off you go. You can do the pictures. Give me a break. And he came back with some absolute crackers. And chucking a camera to someone who's shorter is great because it changes the perspective entirely. So, well done, Ellis. You took some crackers, mate. Thank you very much. And he's getting processed and sent them off to my cousin. Superb. This is the Panasonic One Sensor smartphone. it's more gear, I suppose, than it is news, but the thing that's special about this, it's a 4.7-inch Android smartphone. It's built around a 1-inch image sensor. It's got a 28mm f2.8 Leica lens, and it's dubbed the connected camera. This thing is trying to be a camera more than it's trying to be a smartphone. It really is quite good. I mean, an inch-size sensor, you've got a huge amount of space there to put your receptors in, and the sensor's 20 megapixels. It also shoots 4K video on that sensor as well as. I mean, there's a lot of people running around at the moment arguing whether the Lumia 1020 or the iPhone 6 is the best camera on the market. If this thing's got a 1-inch sensor on it, then that's going to be taking fantastic pictures. This is as close as you're going to get to a camera that's got a phone built around it. Obviously, it's got connectivity. You can also manually change aperture, ISO rating, shutter speed. All of that is controlled through the manual lens rig that's on the front there. Price? No idea. It's an exciting move forwards, says someone. It operates on Android 4.4. It's got 2GB of internal RAM and 16GB of internal storage, which is not enough, really. And a 2.3GHz quad-core processor. You can stick a 128GB card in it if you want to, but we'll have to wait and see. The device is limited to France and Germany at the moment, but it should be available for other countries next year. But Christmas, it's going to be out. I've got to get my hands on this and have a go at it because it looks absolutely superb. I can't wait. If you've got one, please, Panasonic, send me a review unit. Honestly, I'll wash your car. I'll do anything. What can you do with your Pixmar printer when you're bored one day? There's a Pixmar printer, Canon. Yeah, superb. And it's got a screen on the front. Well, what this guy did is he decided he wanted to play Doom on it. So he loaded up a working copy of Doom onto the Canon printer. His name's Michael Jordan. And actually, although this is actually a great example of the fundamental computing power of the Canon Pixmar printer, he actually did it as a security issue. So he gained access to the printer, and through hacking in through the back door, he managed to put on a copy of Doom. It's a good example of what you can do, but having said that, he had physical access to the device. And we've always said on this show, and we said it on the big show last week when we covered this story briefly, if you've got physical access to the device, then I'm afraid There is no security, plain and simple. It's all over and done with. Even your password and your fingerprint recognition and that kind of stuff at some point then becomes invalid. Sony have released 4D focusing at Photokina. This thing is predictive focusing. Effectively, the image is monitored and features within that image are then identified. And then based on the previous movements of those points and what it's done in the past, it will predict where the focus should be applied for the upcoming frames. This has blown my mind. So there's a picture here of a guy playing football, and it's looked on his left ear, it's got the collar of his shirt, so it's areas of contrast, it's looking for edges. It avoids the snapping to focus that you get as it corrects each time, so you get that whizzy blur that will just come up. The sensor on, or the focus on this thing, is already at 0.06 of a second, which is I think that's actually 0.05 of a second is not detectable, but they're saying it is. But this thing will actually pre-focus for where the person's going to be based on where they've moved in the past. This has got to be a concept. I mean, it's got to be kind of a beta, if you like. So I can't see it being absolutely amazing, but if it does work, then this could absolutely revolutionise the way that your camera looks at stuff. And to be honest, you know, things like birds that are tracking towards you when they're coming into land or flying, and you're always trying to focus on things that are moving away from it, they're the worst things to try and manually focus on. If this thing's doing it for you automatically rather than having to do part press shoot, that is pretty cool. It is really cool. It means that I'm out of a job again, of course, but there we go. Now, do you want 4K from your smartphone? Well, you can get it. This is an application that's already in the App Store. It's $1,000. Not the best. It's VisiWig 4K. It touts itself as the world's first mobile app that lets you capture, edit, and distribute 4K video. Now, it's optimized for the 5S, so it's going to definitely work with the 6 and 6 Plus. They are saying that this thing will take in and use the sensor, the full scope of the sensor that you've got in your camera. So you've got 8 megapixels there, which is way more than you need for 4K. I think this is tied into that 30 frames a second burst thing that guy did, and Apple bought him up about 8 months ago, something like that. It's effectively doing the same kind of thing, I would suggest. About £700. If you think logically, 4K is not that bad. I mean, 1020 is only 2 megapixels. 1080 is only 2 megapixels. So for 4K, you're only going up to 1.6 times that resolution to get it. So it's well within the capabilities of the sensor to actually gather that information. It's whether it can process it. The one thing I did notice is that on the review that I saw of it, it did have processing movie written, and I think what it's doing is capturing stills incredibly quickly. So this is going to take up a lot of space on your iPhone, and then it's processing them down into a 4K movie, almost like processing a time lapse from stills, perhaps. I've asked them for a review copy. They haven't sent me one, buggers. I don't know how they do that, whether they can have a time limited one on iOS or not. But dear sir, please would you lend us a copy of this so I can do a review on it? And they've just completely ignored me. So there we go. That's the power of BTN. Never mind. One day they'll wise up. When we're taking over the whole world and we've got the biggest tech broadcasting firm there's ever been, then they'll be sorry. Yeah. Time for the gear. So we're not doing any questions this week because, we only had a couple in, so we need to get some questions. If you've got a question for me to answer next week, then send it in, britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. I'll add it to the list and I'll get it answered, no problem. So if you're listening for your question because you wrote in the two people that did this week, I'll do it next week, I promise, okay, with a few others. But Photokina's gone on and there's just too much to talk about. First things first, Tamron. Tamron have released a 15 to 30mm f2.8 lens. Now, what's the boast on this? What's the USP? They're saying that this is the first lens that has got image stabilization on it of such a wide-angled nature. Why? I've got to say, if you've got a wide-angle lens, probably the last feature you would think of putting on it is going to be image stabilization. So traditionally, you'd look for image stabilization in zoom lenses. So anything up above 400mm, you're really going some to hold it still and take a good picture just through sheer weight of the lens. And then also, you've got the problem of the fact that that the slightest amount of movement, if your low light's down and you're shooting anywhere below sort of 250th of a second, you're probably going to get pretty blurred. So you've got to be careful. That's when image stabilization comes in. What they're saying here is they've put the image stabilization on so that they can get extremely good clarity for low light photography. So being as it's such wide angle, they're probably looking at someone who is taking pictures of buildings or maybe doing something like cosmic photography or something like that, and the image stabilization would help with that, especially when you're talking about, even if you're on a tripod, you know, you press the shutter down and you get that little bit of bounce just because of the mirror moving. I'm not convinced, but okay, if that's what you want. It's got all the usual stuff, 13 groups, 18 elements, 9 blades of diaphragm and all that kind of stuff. It's 5.7 inches long and it weighs 1.1 kilos, so that's 2.5 pounds. It's going to be available for Canon, Nikon and Sony. There's no price on it yet either. I think that's going to be the deciding factor for me. I've got to say, I don't see me spending a lot of money on something that's going to give me a fairly limited benefit. I've never really done astral photography or anything like that, although I had a bit of a stab last night and cocked it up completely. I couldn't get the focus right because I couldn't see a damn thing. But the sky was amazing. I wish I'd caught it. But this thing is a bit specialised, and so therefore the price might go up. But I don't see the benefit of the image stabilisation. I mean, if you're going to take stuff in low light, then the best thing to do is hold a black card over the front. When it exposes, just whip the card away quickly. You're probably at that kind of level. You're shooting at 2 or 3 seconds or up to 30 seconds maybe. So I can't see that you're going to get a great deal of benefit from doing an IS. So I'm torn. This thing's really good. This is the GoPro Power Pole. Now, this is a Kickstarter project. It extends the life of your GoPro. So it's a reach pole. It goes up to 30 inches long, and it's full of batteries, effectively. You charge it up, and then there's a USB that goes into your GoPro and keeps it running. There's also a mount for it that holds your iPhone 5 or 4, and you can plug that in as well, so you've got extra power for your iPhone as well as. It looks really, really good. I really fancy one of these, and if you could fit a gimbal on the end or something like that, so for a bit of image stabilization, that'd be super cool, and then power the gimbal off it as well. I don't see why you couldn't, because it's just a USB out, so you could make up a little tiny hub or a multiple connection or something to spread the power. I think that wouldn't be too bad at all. Price on this, well, it's a Kickstarter project at the moment. They're talking about shipping these as soon as October, and the Kickstarter's still running, so they've obviously got quite a few all ready to go, I would have said. It's $130 at the moment if you want to buy in. That gets you a T-shirt as well, though. The price of these at retail is probably going to be about $169, so you're actually getting a good deal there. You get, for $130, you get a T-shirt, you get the GoPro pole, and you get the holder for your iPhone 5. They only allow you to choose iPhone 5 or iPhone 4. There's no choice for iPhone 6 yet. If there was a choice for iPhone 6 Plus, they'd have $130 by now. But I'm afraid they haven't, so they're going to have to wait. But it looks great, I got to say. I do a lot of GoPro work, so the ability to carry something around, and I also thought about it as well, I could tie it or zip tie it out off a scaffold pole or things like that, and I'd have 5 times the length on some time lapse. So that would work really, really well. Good innovation, well done, chaps. Love it to bits. This is a USB tassel charger. it's got the word tassel in the title. How the hell are you going to sell anything that's got the word tassel in the title? That's ridiculous. And it's called a stylish tassel charger, but it's anything but stylish, plain and simple. And here's the real killer. It's $60. I mean, this thing is just a cable, effectively, that you can plug your device into to get some charge off something else. It's just a USB cable. There's no battery in this thing or anything like that. It's just a USB cable that you can then put into a cell-put thing for charging. It's crap. It's awful. It's $60. Holy crap, not having it. Something slightly more sensible is Sigma. They've launched an 18 to 300 millimeter lens. It's an all-in-one zoom. Goes from f3.5 to f5.6 at the top end. Effectively, If you're on a crop sensor, that's going to give you 27 to 450 millimeters. So it's built for your full frame and you can use it for crop. It's got optical image stabilization included, which is good. It's really good. But the problem that you get with this type of lens is where you've got huge extensions, they're never that accurate. So you tend to find that the last quarter turn on the zoom is pretty fuzzy. You're more likely going to find that this is a really cracking 18 to 200 mil. And generally the rule is the more you go down at the low end, then the more the blur starts to creep in at the top end. So I had a 28 to 300 once, and it got pretty nasty from about 250, 220 mil onwards, I would have guessed. If you're going down to 18, this is perhaps going to give you really bad quality. I don't know. I don't want to slag it off because I haven't had a go with it. But, I mean, that's the big kind of... That's a bit kind of, you know, be careful. If you're going to buy one of these things, I'd certainly go somewhere where you could have a try of it and then buy it from the shop, given the benefit of having the shop, or buy it from somewhere like Amazon that doesn't mind you sending it back, or Wex or something like that, just because you don't like it. Price as well, $580. So that's going to come in about the £430 mark. That's not bad. That's okay. I mean, if you look at this, I think the Sigma 70-300 is around the sort of 250 mark, something like that. So with image stabilization as well, if this doesn't get soft at the top end, that's a really good price. My caution is go and have a go. Don't just take it on face value, most definitely. Samsung has debuted its flagship DSLR. There it is. It's the NX1. I've got to say, this looks super gorgeous. It shoots 4K video. That's not bad, is it? The pack includes, if you want it, a 50mm to 150mm lens that's f2.8 all the way up. So that's not bad value to start with, have that in there. It's a 28 megapixel APS-C sensor. It'll shoot in 15 frames per second for burst mode. That's not bad at all. Here's the cool one. It shoots 4K video. So it's a full 4K video. And it'll play that out through an HDMI slot, which is pretty cool as well, so you can review it live. It's got adaptive noise reduction, which it sounds great, but I don't know what that means. And it goes from 100 ISO to 51,200 ISO, which is a bit of a weird figure. But that's great. Great move. It's got an electronic viewfinder in it. It hasn't got a standard viewfinder. But the thing with this is that the viewfinder, although it's a TV screen, has only got a lag of, I'm showing you the wrong pictures there, duh. It's only got a lag of 5 milliseconds, which according to Samsung means it's completely undetectable to the human eye. So what you're seeing is effectively real time, if you like, for what you're interested in. You wouldn't notice any difference with it. The build quality looks excellent, I have to say. The images don't look too heavily touched. They're not bad at all. It's got a tilty, slidey, selfie side screen and all that kind of stuff. It's supposedly weather sealed as well, which they don't explain what that means, whether it's dust and damp and all the usual stuff, or whether this thing really is, you know, pretty heavily splash proof. And it's got the Samsung NX mounting system. There is a 300mm lens coming next year as well as. So keep your eyes open for that. Big problem is I can't find a price on it. Oh, I can find a price on it. The price is $1,500 for body only, which I think is a really good price. That's not bad at all. And if you want the 16-50mm 2.8 lens and a vertical battery grip, then that's going to bump the price up to $2,800. It's available for pre-order now from B&H Video if you want to get it. At $1,500, okay, you're walking away and you're on a proprietary lens fitting. So that's not particularly brilliant. But that's not bad. Not bad at all. Would I be tempted? No. I'd be tempted to have a go. And a 4K video, natively. I'd want to try, that's for sure. It's something that I couldn't pass up if it was given as an opportunity. I'm not going to jump from Canon, though. Too many lenses. Talking to Canon, here's their new G7X. This is a compact camera. It's kind of been overshadowed a little bit because, of course, the 7D Mark II was launched at Photokina as well. This is a 20 megapixel CMOS sensor. If you've ever owned any of the G series, you know, like the G10, the G9, the G12, they're great cameras. I've just given the G, my little G12 to my daughter and said, you know, here you go, fill your boots, take as many pictures as you like. And she absolutely adores it. She's not too bad with it either. So they're always being good quality. CMOS sensor, very, very good image capture. At 20 megapixels, it's probably too big for what most people want. The lens on the front goes from f1.8 to f2.8, and it's 24mm to 100mm. That's not too bad. That's not too bad at all. At 24mm, other people are in your photos rather than the other way around. It's got a selfie screen, so you can flip this thing up and see exactly what you're taking when you take a picture of yourself. It folds right the way over, so you're looking right into it. The controls look pretty well laid out. I've got to say, they're fairly simplistic, and I always liked the G12. I thought it was a very intuitive camera. It's got this rolly wheel on the top, where there's a pop-up flash that comes out as well. A lot of flashes are getting missed off cameras now, so that's pretty cool. I always liked the controls on the G12. I thought it was very, very good. It shoots 1080p video at 60 frames a second, which is really good. That's excellent. 6.5 frames per second in burst mode, and it's also got a built-in neutral density system. So you start shoving it into light, as soon as you part press the shutter, it's going to automatically apply those neutral density filters to the image. Wi-Fi and NFC included. It's out next month for $700, so that's going to retail in the £550-600 mark. I think that's pushing it a bit. It's not bad. It's a good camera, and if it's, like I say, in the same vein as the G12 and that kind of stuff, I think that's not bad at all. But the price tag is just a little bit high. You knock £100 off that, and you take it below £500, I think that's going to get a recommendation off me every time, because I know the quality of the G-series. I'd go and have a try. Find yourself a local camera shop and who know what they're talking about and give it a go. Go down to Calumet or something like that. They're usually good there. Don't know whether they carry that or not, but there we go. You've been waiting for it, but here it is. Yes, it's the 7D Mark II. My old PowerShot A64 is still going strong, says Mullabyte. Why do I need that? GB Rednet says, at $2,000, it's an absolute bargain. And Muller says, I'm going to stick with me 1200D. Yes, good lad. Like that. Canon 7D Mark II. This has been waiting for a while. 20 megapixel APS-C sensor. ISO is 100 to 51,200. What's quite interesting is the 7D always kind of have definitely hit the prosumer mark. It was never, you know, totally pro. And what they've done is they've pushed out a lot of specs about the durability of this camera. And one of them is that the shutter is rated for 200,000 cycles. So you're well into pro level there. You know, to go through 200,000 images, you'd be talking about a lifetime's use with a pro and a busy job in pro, most definitely. As with all the Canon stuff, it comes with a battery grip if you want to pay extra for it and add on. And the batteries usually don't last a full day if they're on their own. You can get about 400 images out of it at best, maybe a bit less. So you do want the battery grip if you're going to go out and shoot for the whole day, which adds weight and it adds bulk and you've got to carry it around. The controls on it, I thought looked quite good. I mean, they're not a million miles of a leap forwards from, and they're not quite like the 6D. They're a bit closer to the original 7 or the 5. Screen looks nice, a lot of detail on there, a lot of things to read off. That's not too bad. Laid out quite nicely as well. It looks very decent. Got that dial on the top, just like all the other models. I like the look of this. It's nice. What does it do for you then? Well, it's going to shoot 4K video at 1080p, which is great. It's going to shoot 60 frames a second at 1080 as well. It's going to shoot 4K video for you, and then it's going to shoot 1080p video at 60 frames a second. And what's interesting as well is that this thing will output to MP4 or to MOV. And I think that's a real that definitely says prosumer to me, because if you're a pro, you want to dump it out in MOV, because then you're going to get probably or very limited compression on it. So it's far better for sticking in Final Cut and getting the best quality output at the end. You don't want a double compressed video. If you're an amateur, you're not too worried about pushing out MP4, but the thing you got to watch is it's compressed already. So if you then put it into Final Cut Pro or iMovie or something like that, and then you dump the movie out at the end as a 1080 or a 720p movie with H.264, it's going to be double compression, and you might end up, depending on what you your computer's like and what the original footage's like, you might end up getting a lot of compression artifacts on it. So watch out for that. You know, I think that clearly says prosumer to me. A lot of the reviews have been going on the fact there's no Wi-Fi in this thing. But I've got to say, I've got Wi-Fi in my 6D, and I cannot for the life of me see what the point is. Yeah, all right, if you want the infinite shooting thing where you can pass it off to your laptop in a studio, that's fine. But more and more, I think jobbing photographers are actually people out in the field. They don't do shed loads of studio work, so that's fairly limited as an option. I don't think that's a big deal. It's certainly not a killer for me because I wouldn't use it. It's going to be released in November, and it's $1,800. According to the price. So that's probably going to translate to about £1,600. That's a really good price. And I've got a 6D at the moment, and one of the things that frustrates me is I'm not shooting 60 frames a second with it. So for the sake of £1,500, I can get myself a spare body as a backup. I can give it a trial at the 4K level if I really want to, although I don't really need to do 4K, but what I do want to do is 60 frames a second. That really is a big part for me. So when this comes out in November, you know, if the work's flowing in quite well and people have been paying their bills, I could see me buying one of these most definitely. But that's because I'm a Canon man, you know. I mean, if you were saying, well, why wouldn't you buy the Nikon one? I ain't got the lenses to go with it, plain and simple. And I'm not going to get rid of 25 grand's worth of lenses just so that I can have a try with a Nikon. The 7D, I like that. And for £1,500, you have a go with it for a couple of weeks. If you really don't like it, you can go back on eBay. You might lose £100 on it if at best. So, for me, it will be something that I'll definitely look at when it comes around. Wex will be getting my credit card information, that's for sure. One of the other things that Canon released also was a new bridge camera. This is the SX60. Chat room's jumping in. I thought GPS was important. No, I've never used GPS, Muller. I've got to say, it's not a factor that ever bothers me. I can remember where I was when I took each photo that I've ever taken. And literally, you know, I go out on railway lines an awful lot. I can look at an image and I can tell you exactly where I was on that railway line on a drawing. I've never understood what GPS was for, unless you wanted an app that tracked a trail or something like that, or if you were shooting something specific like an aircraft or a... and you wanted to know which way you were pointing or where the thing was, then yeah, I could see the benefit of that, but not really. You can buy a GPS unit for the 1200D, but it's over £200. It's a complete rip-off. I think, you know, I mean, if you want GPS, then fine, look for a camera that's got GPS in. And there's a lot of the compacts that got GPS in, and that might be more than enough. Go back to the one that we said before, the GX7. That may have GPS in. I haven't looked on the specs fully. But if that's what you want, then fine. Don't buy this camera because it's not what you want, plain and simple. But I think certainly Wi-Fi and GPS is of no value to me, none whatsoever. So back to the SX60. This is a bridge camera from Canon. If you want to take the lens off, you're going to have to get a hacksaw out. Got built-in flash. It looks comfortable. It looks ergonomic. It's nice. This is one of those super zooms, though. So this has got a 65 times zoom. That means you're going to be pushing this out to, wait for it, the equivalent of 1,365 millimeters, which is huge. I mean, you are never going to hold that thing anywhere near still enough to take a decent picture handheld. This has got to go on a monopod at least, but even then, I don't think. It's got to be on a tripod to get that kind of benefit. And even then, you might get a fair bit of bounce in it. I'd be sceptical, but if you're into the super zoom, I don't see where there's a market for bridge cameras anymore, I have to say. Lens is f3.5 to f6.5. Well, if it's super zoom, you're not really worried about depth on that, so it doesn't really matter. It's got intelligent image stabilization. I'd say this has got to be more than intelligent. I'm going to say this is damn near frigging genius level stabilization. At 1,365 millimeters. 1080p at 60 frames a second, that seems to be a norm now, so I'm definitely out of the loop as far as that's concerned. It does have Wi-Fi, for those of you that need it. There you go, Muller, you can have it there. And it's got NFC included as well as it. Released next month, and it's $550. So actually, that's a pretty cheap camera, and it does an awful lot, and it's, you know, Canon do pretty well in the compact market. You can't knock the quality level that you've got with them, so... it's worth a punt if you like your bridge cameras. I don't, and I don't see where the market is, but you may. This is a Sony FF frame lens. It's the first of a kind of native Sony lens that's available for the A7 and the A7R and the A7F Bosy. All of these lenses that are coming out over the next couple of months are going to be fitted with image stabilization. This is a wide angle lens. This is 16-35mm f4. And it's got image stabilization on it. And going back to what we said about the other earlier Tamron image, you know, that, okay, there's fairly limited value to that. At f4, you're not doing low light because you'd want to go right the way down as far as you could with that, perhaps. It's nice. The build quality is pretty good, but this thing is $1,350. So that's coming out around the £1,100 mark to £1,200 mark. Yes, it's Zeiss optics and all that kind of stuff, but that's an expensive, that's a premium price to pay that for an f4 lens. If you were looking for something that's equivalent in the Canon range, you'd be paying that kind of price to be picking up something at 2.8. So why would you want to pay that for an f4 just because it's got a bit of swing to it? I think they've got to be careful. I mean, there's a lot of things with a lot of the money, that's the stuff that's coming out from Photokina, where I'm looking at it and thinking, do you know what? It's nice stuff, but I really don't think you're going to spend it at that price. You're not really going to get the price for that at the shops. There could be a lot of this stuff that hits very big price drops in the next few months. So I'd hang fire on some of this because I think the price is going to come down. I think sometimes as well they announce a price at Photokina, and then when it hits the shelves they can go, oh, but we've had a saving, so you can go get it for this. And you're like, wow, and massive saving, so you drop and you go and buy it. It's a typical ploy in the past. And talking of ploys, Olympus is trying to get you to buy this as a pro. This is the OMD and the EM1. They're two models that are out there from Olympus. And they're looking for the pro vote, allegedly. What's happened is they've taken the basic OMD model and they've given it an alloy coaty finish, silver, aluminium-y type glossy stuff. These images are so heavily touched that they look like they're just computer-generated composites. Which distrusts incredibly from it. I've downloaded the media pack and looked at what camera they were taken on. These cameras were taken on Adobe, according to the image information. There is no camera listed in the EXIF file. So that makes me doubly dubious that they've got to do some heavy photoshopping with this. They really want to attract pose to it with a brand new version of firmware and just a paint job. Well, okay, they painted it silver. That's not going to be enough for me. They've included a 40 to 150 millimeter lens at f2.8, which is okay, great. They've also got a feature on these things called keystone compensation. So effectively what that's doing is giving the old tilt shit look. And I haven't got that word wrong before you write in. So it's getting that offset effect of blurriness through the image that you receive. Body only price of this, $1,400. So that's £1,250. For £1,250 for this camera, I want David Bailey around cleaning my frigging car, as well as I think they've got the pricing vastly wrong on this. I mean, for what it is, you know, a little Micro Four Thirds compact camera. That's a premium price. I'm sure it takes lovely images, don't get me wrong, but there's lots of other cameras out there that will take images that are probably just as good and probably half the price in some cases. So go and have a look and have a play, see what you think. If you think it's better and I'm wrong, then please write in and tell me. I'll always take that, but it really doesn't do it for me. Leica have released a new camera. Not Leica, what am I talking about? Panasonic Lumix have released a new camera, the DMC GM5. This is Micro Four Thirds 16 megapixel camera. It's got no built-in flash. If you want the flash, you're going to have to buy it extra, and it just clips on the top into a hot shoe. It shoots 1080p at 60 frames a second. It's got onboard video editing as well. So if you look on the back, and I couldn't find a picture of the back, which is kind of silly really based on the fact this is one of the features, it has Snap Movie. Now, Snap Movie is the ability to take any of the movies that you've shot and edit them in camera. And then, providing you've got Wi-Fi connectivity, you can bounce them out to your social media straight from the camera. Wow, that's great. Well done. But you're talking about doing video editing on a 3-inch screen. I've been in trouble on a bloody 15-inch screen with a 27-inch monitor backing me up. I'm really going to struggle if I've got to put this thing out. It's a holiday cam. It's a chop and shoot cam. It's great. Here's the thing. It's $900. I just don't. That's a lot of money for something that's nice picture taking and got innovative features, but you know, are people really going to be paying £800 for a compact camera? This is a holiday camera in terms of size and in terms of function. I don't see where that price is coming from. But again, maybe it's just a photo keener ploy. And talking of ridiculous prices, it wouldn't be fit to finish the show without a little soiree through Leica's offering. They've offered up 8 lenses with 6 changes to those lenses. They've got the Leica Suramit M50mm f2.4 lens. I think that's this one. I can't tell because they're all... No, that's the Noctilux one. That's not. That's further down. Which one is it? That's it, the Summerix. There we go. They're great. I mean, you know, Leica is as Leica does. But that lens, that little tiny lens that fits on the front of Leica cameras is... $2,000. Okay, I'm sure it's a great lens, but $2,000 for a 50mm 2.4 lens. Someone is pulling your chain. Bend over, Leica fans. Here it comes. The Summerit M90mm lens, which is this one, again, looks gorgeous. And I'm sure the build quality is amazing. But that's $2,500 for that one. Yeah. Great. Comes with a petal hood as well. Lovely. $2,500 for a 90mm fixed lens at 2.8. No, I don't think so. And the last one, but by no means least, was the one I showed you to start with. Wait for it and check your bowels. This is the Leica Noctilux M50mm f0.5. Well, that's pretty special, you got to admit. Lens, and it fits on the front of your Leica camera. Come on, chat room, have a guess at the price of this one. The Noctilux M50mm f0.5. You're going to pay a little bit more because of the f0.5. You know it. But are you willing to pay me $11,500? You heard me right. $11,500 for a lens the size of a teacup. People who own Leicas, no freaking sense. I'm sorry, they're lovely, don't get me wrong, I'm sure they take great pictures, but there is no way on God's green earth that the build quality and the cost pricing of that lens is half, quarter of that. That they're making those for £500 and selling them to you for £11,000, I'm sure of it. I don't want to slander them, maybe they aren't, but holy crap. I can't read what Miller's put in, but it's basically FFS, yeah, unbelievable. £3,000 was his guess, no, 11.5, dude. So into Leica cameras, because they had a fair old offering, and I'm going to surprise you here. There's 4 new cameras on offer that are out there from Photokina. First one is the this is the X. The X is a fairly basic compact camera that looks pleasant enough, don't get me wrong, but it's £2,500, $2,500. There's not actually an awful lot there on it. 16.3 megapixel APS-C sensor, recording 1080p at 30 frames a second. Well, everyone's already at 60 frames a second, so I don't know what that's all about. And it's got a fixed 23mm lens on it. That's it. And they want £2,500 for that. I don't think so. Next one is the XE, this one here. This one looks like it's come out of a kid's toy set. You know, it's like the camera that you got in the 70s that your grandparents brought you after they'd been on holiday and they couldn't think of anything to buy you. So they bought you one of these Leica-looking cameras back. I don't like Leica, you know I don't. This is a Leica XE. It's got some nice features, I'm sure, but I'm not going to read them out because I can't be asked. And it looks pretty sweet, and the dials look nice, and they look really rolly, 1970s rolly type stuff. This one's a bit cheaper; it's $1,800, so that's getting a bit better. But it's, you know, it's competing with the X100 series and the ones that we've just looked at in the compacts there, and you know, they are quality cameras. The X100 series is an excellent, excellent camera. I disbelieve that Leica is shooting a better image quality than the X100, and yet they're more than twice the price. I think they've got real problems with this. The next one actually is something that, that might not be too bad. This is the Deluxe. Now, the Deluxe is a Micro Four Thirds interchangeable lens camera. Shoots 4K video at 24 and 30 frames a second. 12.8 megapixels. It's got a fixed, it's got a lens on it that's a zoom lens at 24 to 75 millimeters. You can't change it, f1.7 to f2.8. Again, I'm sure this is a fantastic image, and the fact that it's nice is great, but it's $1,200 again. So, I mean, there really are, I mean, there's a lot of price drops here from Leica. If you've watched Leica prices, these are significantly lower than you would have expected maybe a couple of years ago. And this thing is really trying to compete in there with that X100 series. They've got the pricing right on that if that's what they want to do. Image quality is going to be the thing that pushes you over. And if you really, really, really want the Leica badge because you want to measure, then this is perfect because it's going to be about the same price as that X100 style series, the Pen series, and do you a good job. Now, here's something you're not going to hear me say very often, because this is the Velux. The Leica Velux is a 4K resolution camera that only outputs MP4 footage at 25 frames a second, so that's a bit of a limit for me to start off with. It'll shoot images at up to 50 frames a second. Now, that's pretty special. 20 megapixels, and you can get a 25 to 400 millimeter vario emirate lens on it. It's really quite a pleasant camera. I like the look of this one. I like the feel of the way the controls are laid out. It's a lot more familiar to me. It looks like it takes a fantastic image, and it's got the Leica badge on if that's what you want. Best part here, $1,350. So they really are trying to compete with this one now in at the lower end or the higher end of the compact market. I'd like to have a go with this, but the last two cameras, the pricing's not stupid, is it? And that's the thing with Leica, is that traditionally the pricing that they come out with is just mental. It's of no real, it's not in touch with reality in the slightest. But these are an awful lot better. And I did say I would only buy a Leica camera when all of the promo shots were shot on Leica cameras and not on Nikons. Guess what? All of the promo shots are shot on Leicas. They've learnt their lesson. All of the Leicas are, all of the cameras are shot on the Leica S, and lo and behold, here's the Leica S. That's the worst picture they could have possibly put out in a press release. That picture was shot with a Leica S, and that is the Leica S. I don't think I've done anything to turn it that horribly black, but there we go. This might be a camera which is actually worth the money from Leica, and it's £16,000. What? You say what? $60,000, sorry. Well, this shoots 4K video. It's weather sealed as well, so it's built to go out on the hills with you. It's got that DSLR kind of feel to it, so it looks nice. Takes all of the Leica lenses. But what's nice about this is it's shooting medium format. So you're not talking about shooting on little crappy 1-inch cross sensors now. You're talking about shooting on proper medium format sensors. So in the medium format market, the cheapest you can get is the Panasonic D series off the top of my head. And they're kind of running in at about the 10K mark. I think there's a Hasselblad GPN version at about 10K. So that's pounds. So this is going to be about £12,000, £13,000 tops. And that's not bad. That's really quite competitively priced for a medium format camera. This is going to sound stupid because I'm never going to do this, but if this came with a bayonet fitting that would fit my Canons, then I would probably buy this as a body because it's going to take fantastic images, I'm sure of it. And at the price, it's not bad at all. So there you go. Is this the first Canon? Is this the first camera that Leica have brought out that really is probably worth the money? Might be. Really might be. And this one is the S, the full S. There's two versions of this. You've got the one that I just showed you, which is the... I've gone on the wrong page. I'm losing my notes. The first one is the S, and the second one is... Sorry, the SE Type 06, and the second one is the S Type 07. This one is a 37.5 megapixel CMOS sensor. It's got the Maestro 2 image processing in it. It's capable of 3.5 frames per second on burst mode, which you're thinking, well, that's not very much at all. But it shoots 4K video at 60 frames a second. I haven't seen another camera that does that at the moment outside of professional level digital, you know, broadcast cameras. So this thing's got a really good capability. Fantastically big sensor. It's medium format again, but it's $25,000. Is it worth the money? It might be. It really might be. If you're talking about shooting that kind of level of video and getting the image quality that you would expect out of a Leica, this isn't quite bang for buck, but it's not bad. It's not bad at all. Muller in the chat room says, that's too rich for me. My Coolpix S9700 was replaced by John Lewis, and it does me just fine. $16,000, I would need to keep it in a vault, say the chat room. Yeah, maybe you would. But there you go. You've heard me say there today that there's three or four Leica cameras that might be worth the money. Hell has frozen over. Here we go. If you've got anything that you want us to read about on the photo show, any tips or anything that you see as a hint or a good story that you think you'd like to cover, then send it to us at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. Make sure you write photo show on it, because I'll only search in my email under photo show and see what comes up. The other thing is, if you want to send us a question, normally at this point we do the question and answers, but as I say, we've only had a couple of questions in this week, and Photokina has kind of dominated the whole thing, and we're already up to an hour of recording now. So send your questions to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. We'll have a bigger question section next week, because I'm sure you'll get like the backdraft of all of the news disappearing off to next week. So we'll be light on news, so let's be big on questions. Send them through britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Patreon and give us a donation. If you like the fact we brought the photo show back and we brought the daily show back, Pocket is doing fantastically. That is a great format show. Unbelievable. Gamer Show's right in there as well, and Mac and Big as normal, and the House of Cards podcast too. Then send us through a dollar. British Tech Network is available at patreon.com/British Tech Network. And if you just want to give us a dollar, that would be great. If everyone who listened to the big show gave us $1, we would do this professionally. And all the shows would be here all the time and on time, as well as we'd have a proper schedule of broadcast, and we'd be a bit like Twit Network. So you've just got to start chucking a bit more money towards us if you want that to happen. I'm not begging, but facts remain, everyone else has to work on the network, and I have to work on the network. So if we're not getting any income from it, then it's hobbyist at that point, unless someone's paying us. But thank you to those people who have. Leave us a review in iTunes if you can. Also, check out UK2, because they give us all the bandwidth. Go to our sponsors page, and they've got loads and loads of deals there that you can get tucked out with. And also, we've got the Network Union, who are people that support our Patreon draw as well, as which is going to start up. Again, this I keep saying it's going to start up, but it's going to start up, I promise. So check them out. If you're MPLS, WAN, SIP, any of that kind of stuff, or you're a consultant that's in a business that uses that, then please pass forward their details so that they can at least have a try, or tell them that you've passed the details forward to the decision makers just through an email. That would be great. At least Robert would know then that there's some traction in the advertising he's given us. Right, we'll be back again next week, I hope, on Friday with the photo show at 1 o'clock, and then we've got the Mac show at 3 next week, so that'd be pretty cool. And it's good to be back. Thanks for everyone who's written in. It's been really nice. See you next week. Thanks for listening.